Hello and welcome to Full Access Hoops and OTG Basketball Podcasts. Please, please, please head to otgbasketball.com for the latest and greatest NBA content out there. We have a Hire or Fire series. We have team previews for all 30 NBA teams rolling out. Karen just dropped a Justice League pass. She does this thing where she breaks down basically superheroes to their NBA counterparts. Jay actually inspired the Justice League idea from her Marvel idea. So definitely check out that series she's running. It's extremely fun and entertaining. And then, of course, with me on this pod is the one and only Jay Christian. Jay, how's it going?
Corey, good to be here, man.
Yeah, nice little plug for you to start. That was a good idea, giving Karen the Justice League pass as she began her new little NBA comparison series.
I do what I can for the squad, man.
Yeah, it's always appreciated. So obviously, the NBA is kicking up. We are well into October. We are 2 weeks away, basically, from the start of the NBA season.
So close.
I don't know what – there's so much to talk about, which is actually exciting because for a while we were like, all right, we're going to go every other week because there's just nothing really to talk about. I want to start with the Sixers media day. So obviously the 76ers are here. And also, before I touch the Sixers part, they did the measurements. Actually, this is where we should start. They did measurements for all NBA players.
Right.
And now every NBA player is a different height. We're getting like actual heights for players. So for something that I had a comment about was, and this is going to, we're starting off with some controversy. Zion Williamson is 6'6". I'm supposed to believe this man is going to play center. I get he is super strong. I heard the deep breath. I know he's strong. I know he's ridiculously athletic. But inside, I'm cackling at the thought of Zion Williamson going against Joel Embiid or Rudy Gobert. Tell me why I shouldn't feel that way.
Well, I'd say for two reasons. One, this sort of I was surprised that this was a story in terms of the NBA wants real measurements and weights for players. That's always kind of been a media guide thing, right? You know, Barkley was, I think, long listed at 6'6", and Barkley's actually closer to 6'4", which makes his run in the NBA all that more incredible. Larry Johnson, Charlotte Hornets and New York Knicks fame was, I think, listed as 6'7" in his heyday. He's a legit 6'5" in his socks. So the little fibbing, I mean, Kevin Durant's taller by like 3 inches than Hakeem Olajuwon and Dwight Howard, and the sissy 6'9", which we all know is a lie. So that little fibbing for the media guide purposes is always going on in basketball from college and pros, and I mean even high school too. But so that's gone on, and then I'd say that's not that I was surprised. That was a bigger reveal that people were like, wow, what, this person's really not, you know, 6'9" or what have you. And then two, I think you should be comforted in the fact that there are some great centers historically undersized who were full-time centers way before your time and also before my time. I'm not that old, but Wes Unseld, who was one of the few men along with, I think, Wilt Chamberlain. And actually, I think Candace Parker. I was the only three players to win MVP and Rookie of the Year in the same season. A very short, exclusive club. Wes Unseld played center for the Washington Bullets. And Wes Unseld is probably 6'6", 6'7", on a good day. But big ass, really long arms. And was able to get in there and bang with the likes of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Bill Walton, Bob Lanier, et cetera, et cetera. And that was a full-time center. So if Zion's going to have the small ball lineups and he's at center at times, I think he's okay. I mean, now, if you were drafting him and you said he was going to be the center, then I, you know, will cackle with you in unison. But I think the fact that the Pelicans want to use him in a small ball, death lineup is so cliche, but death lineup type situation, I think he can steal some minutes at the position. But six, and to be honest with you, 6'6", I'm not that surprised by. I mean, you know, like I said, that's a practice as old as time is fibbing on heights. So that I'm not that shocked by.
I thought six, when he was listed, I think it was like 6'8", 6'7", I was already saying in my, like, I remember like on the NBA outlet in particular, I was saying like, I don't like a 6'7" guy at center. And granted, you're right. There are cases throughout NBA history where right. that wasn't an issue. And
but those exceptions prove the rule, right? To your point, right? Like,
right.
The fact that we can name five of them in the history of the league makes your point for you, right?
In a way it does, but at the same time, were any of those guys as well sought out and coveted as Zion Williamson?
I would argue no.
Right.
Not certainly not as athletic, for sure.
Right. So I think like there's, even though like it sort of boosts my argument, none of those guys had the raw talent athletic ability of a Zion Williamson, at least coming into the league, right. would be the counter argument to that.
Right.
So I guess, I mean, obviously we got to wait and see. That was one of the things that caught my eye. Obviously, still somewhat of a slow news day to have heights as the big controversial topic on NBA right. Twitter. Right. I know they went through like the 76ers starting lineup, and their depth lineup or their, you know, tall lineup isn't as like tall now that you have their actual height. Like, it still is tall, but like Josh Richardson is 6'5", Ben Simmons instead of being 6'10" is 6'9", Horford instead of being 6'10" is like 6'9". I think Embiid is still 7 foot, and then Tobias Harris is 6'7" instead of 6'8". But it doesn't really matter, because that means, even if this is actually me talking myself to make sense and be logical, if one team and several players are having their height adjusted, it's going to be pretty much the entire NBA.
Sure, so of course.
If the entire NBA is having this height realignment, if you will, then it doesn't change anything, because it's happening to everybody. Now, I'm saying it's not changing the league as much as I thought it did, now that I talked my way through this.
Right. Right. No, I think you're right. Yeah. That. So hence my sort of deep breath when you initially came in hot, just because I think it's a very sort of common practice. Like with the exception of guys like Embiid, like, yeah, that guy's 7 feet. Right. Yeah. That guy's 7 feet tall. Durant's the same way. But otherwise, I mean, media guides, I mean, people have been doing that for, I mean, literally, you know, not centuries, but as long as professional basketball has been around, that's been the case. So I don't think it's much ado about nothing. I think it's interesting. I think it's fascinating to see. I mean, particularly when you see how players dominate, and you're just like, wow, that guy's really 6'6" or 6'4" or what have you. You know what I mean? I think it's actually pretty fascinating to see that, what those guys do on the court, given their actual measurements. But in terms of earth shattering news, I mean, I think it's a non-story, but you know, who am I?
I mean, it was only 6 minutes of this pod, so I think it's a no story. I'm glad I had like my little rant, and then we were able to bring myself back to earth.
We usually spend 10 on OJ, so just
right,
switching
yeah.
up for that.
Still, because there's a tweet that I want to talk about at some point.
I cannot wait.
So, the Philadelphia 76ers. Last episode of this pod with Jay, by the way, to those listening, we did media day for the Lakers, Clippers, Nets, and Rockets. And I think we touched on the Pacers, too. So definitely check that out if you're looking for those. We're going to focus on the teams we haven't talked about, right. One being the Philadelphia 76ers. Joel Embiid's in shape, so that's mm-hmm. promising. At least he looks like he's in shape. I also noticed from just some of the comments, there's a lot of shade being thrown at Jimmy Butler.
Mm-hmm.
You know, low key shade, maybe not like Joel Embiid. I don't think is really throwing shade. Him and Jimmy Butler have a good relationship. Jimmy Butler actually, on the Heat media day, even said that, you know, I exchanged texts with Joel Embiid like daily. Like I love that guy. So, you know, then of course I remember people tweeting saying like Joel Embiid to Miami, when's it gonna happen? Like that's not doesn't always happen, guys. Right, not every player is gonna get traded to his friend's team.
Right.
But yeah, there's some shade thrown at Jimmy. The Ben Simmons stuff is probably the stuff that's caught my eye the most. The fact that like everyone's just pressing him and harping on like, are you gonna shoot threes? Are you gonna shoot them? And he's like, yo, I've been playing basketball for like 15 years, bro. I always shoot threes. And it's like, well, last year you didn't even attempt one. And he's like, okay. He's like, and I was an all-star. So what's your point? Which also is like the greatest flex you can make when somebody's being a douchebag to you as an NBA player. Just be like, yo, bro, I was an all-star last year. Like,
right.
Leave me alone.
So something's working. Obviously it's working. Right?
Yeah. Like, yeah. Like, yes, I have a hole in my game of deficiency. I'm well aware of it. You're all well aware of it. I still made an all-star team. And also I do think that this year, I'm not saying he's going to shoot them at a large degree. I'm not saying they're going to go in. But if teams continue to disrespect him and give him 10 feet off the three-point line,
Right.
I feel confident in him shooting at least 15 to 20 times, at least once a game. If he gets that kind of disrespectful look, that he takes the look.
Attempts, I have again, to believe you, oh, I will take that bet. Do you think Ben Simmons will shoot 15 to 20 times in the NBA on a night in, night out basis? I'll do it at 15. I'll do the over under.
No. I think over the course of the season, he'll shoot at least 20 threes.
Oh shit! Yeah. So well,
he didn't shoot any last year. That's the thing. He didn't shoot any last year.
Well, that to the reporter's point, you thought was shading him. That's the point, right? I mean, so yeah, let's just get okay. I'm kind of on the other side on this, right? I will grant you that reporters coming in. I think Ben Simmons, whether or not he's shooting, is in a way, in some ways, it's cold tea, right? I mean, in some ways, at a media day, asking Ben Simmons about shooting is lazy journalism to an extent, but I think it's fair. This is the part where we've talked about the workout videos before. The guy from the Philadelphia Inquirer, the guy who runs FanSided for the 76ers, or what's the other whatever blog or whatever for the Philadelphia 76ers, they're not putting those videos out of him shooting in the summer, right? Like, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. If you have all these videos out, and I don't know if Ben Simmons is even putting them out, but I would suspect that he has some sort of creative control over some of those videos that come out. Not all of them, but some. And that's what you flood the timeline with in July and August. Don't be surprised at Media Day if we ask you about shooting. Because as you pointed out, one, you didn't take any threes, right? And from a purely basketball standpoint, forget sort of the, you know, sort of quote-unquote lazy journalism at times with some of these questions. You have to be a threat on the floor, Ben Simmons. Yeah, you were an all-star last year, and you know, you're probably an all-star again this year, one of the top, definitely one of the top players in the East, easily one of the top young players in the NBA. Taking none of that away from you. But he also has to be a threat on the floor. So it's fair to ask about shooting and being more offensively aggressive in Brett Brown's system. Now, you know, where you get, I think, sort of dickish is when you're like, well, how many are you going to shoot? Da, 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 da. You know, right. Trying to, you know, make comparisons to Steph Curry. And to Ben's point, it's like, yeah, I'm Ben Simmons. I'm not a splash brother, which I think is totally fair on his part. But I mean, yeah, my guy, we're going to ask you questions about you shooting, because if I'm the Celtics or whoever, the Raptors, I'm backing up. Yeah, a broke clock is right two times a day. So I'm going to make you, yeah, shoot it. And if we have to pack the paint on Joel Embiid and, you know, we lose, I always say, like, if I was playing the Warriors, right, and I lose the game and the headline says Draymond has career 45 points, you know, Jay's team can't answer, doesn't answer him, that's fine. I'm okay with that. You can't let people beat you with shit they're trying to beat you with. So if Ben Simmons somehow comes out of the gate and has a Michael Jordan shoulder shrug game from three, I'm okay with that. I'm fine. Until he does it consistently, I don't care. So I guess I'm just a little whatever, because I think those are fair questions, right? And I don't see why he's getting all up in arms about it. That's just me. But,
well, I mean, I don't think it's not a fair question, but I don't know if you saw the video. The guy just like asked them the same question, basically twice reworded.
And right. And that's lazy. I agree. Granted, that was right. Lazy.
And Ben Simmons was just like, bro, basically the reporter made it seem like, are you like, you've never shot threes in your career? And he's like, bro, I've been playing basketball. Like, yeah, I shoot threes. Like, well, you didn't last year. You're going to shoot them this year. And he was like, I'm going to shoot more threes. And then of course, like that journalist too, you know, which is like his own clapback, because obviously Ben Simmons ended that conversation by saying, I mean, an all-star team. And then after the team scrimmage, Ben Simmons didn't take a three, I guess. And the report tweeted, scrimmage is finished, Ben Simmons did not shoot a three. And you know, so now that there's like that little like tit for tat between that reporter and Ben Simmons.
And you're going to always lose that because the reporter has the pin. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. That's just what it is.
So I thought that was interesting. I mean, I'm not expecting Ben Simmons to be like a 40% three-point shooter. And I don't even think he's going to be a 30% three-point shooter. But if Russell Westbrook can shoot 22% and jack up 9 threes a game, then like Ben Simmons, if you're wide open, your look is still of the shot-taking quality that I would be okay with.
Well, that's the thing, right? So that's what we haven't seen, and I don't think in Ben Simmons, and I'm, you know, I don't follow Philly as much as some of the OTG staff, but in the games I've watched, I think that's the difference, right? Russell Westbrook, you know, rightly or wrongly, mostly probably wrongly based on numbers and percentages and history, thinks that his range starts when he walks in the gym. But, yeah. You know, the classic, you know, never met a shot he didn't like, right? But he's aggressive. And Ben Simmons, there are times where it's not so much him missing. I think the issue, the thing that I think Philly fans and basketball fans talk about is him passing up the opportunity. It's not the missing. Like, if he just missed like Westbrook, then that's a whole other conversation. But I think being a threat on the floor and making the defense sort of respect him squaring up to the basket is more the issue, right? I don't care if he, like say, percentages, I could care less about.
Right. It's the fact of the matter is that when he pulled, like when Russell Westbrook is coming up the court, to your credit, to what you're saying is every defender is still watching Westbrook. Isn't a place on the court that you can say, all right, Westbrook, I'm going to give you 15 feet. You're playing Westbrook from the minute he touches the ball. Whereas Ben Simmons, if they're not in transition and they're moving in a half court set and you see him outside a 3-point line, as long as he's not going, you know, near baseline or standing in the corner about the cut baseline, you can give him space because you don't care. And when nine guys on the court know this guy isn't going to shoot because he can't shoot, then the entire, you know, set of that half court set changes because they know one guy isn't going to do shit unless he gets some head of steam to go to the rim.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's so funny because where his game is, him going to the rim like that, I mean, negatively impact, I think, Embiid for all his range and he's great passing big man, actually, but he's the most deadly in the paint. I think Embiid's one of those still pure back-to-the-back guys, one of the few left in the NBA where, you know, it's a torture chamber down there if you're guarding him 15 feet and in. But, you know, if you got a 6'9 Ben Simmons cutting through and slashing, that eats up some of Joel Embiid's real estate. So you have to not be a spot-up shooter, but have to make the defense respect you and keep that lane open and keep it from being clogged with your defender so Joel Embiid can be the most effective. In my opinion, I mean, you know, I'm not the X's and O's guy, but I just think, you know, from a spacing perspective.
No, I think, I mean, that's a concern I have for this year. I mean, they have less floor spacers this year than last year, losing J.J. Redick. Yes, Tobias Harris is a good shooter, but we don't know Tobias Harris to be like a volume shooter. Like, he's going to have to shoot, you know, I think for his career, the most threes he shot was last year at like four a game. He's going to need to shoot like six or seven this year. They just don't have the 3-point shooters. And as you mentioned, them bringing in now Horford, Ben Simmons cutting, if he doesn't have some sort of even like mid-range game, I mean, that's a lot of activity in the paint because Joel Embiid and Al Horford, like, yes, Al Horford can shoot the three. Joel Embiid has shown that he can shoot the three a little. But you don't want those two guys hawking around the perimeter.
Right. Yeah. That's right. And you touched on it a second ago, just hopping back on the Jimmy Butler thing, the comments. And like you say, it's low-key. I compare it to the Celtics. I don't think it's as the Celtics and Kyrie. I didn't think it was as sort of direct. You know, I think the Celtics from Danny Ainge on down, literally like, it was Kyrie's fault, right? I got a little bit. Yeah. I didn't think the Sixers were that way per se, but I also, like you say, the threads are definitely there in sort of what Jimmy, which is weird because Jimmy was a Philly guy. Like, that's the kind of guy, that was Barkley, that's Bobby Jones, that's Andrew Toney, who, by the way, has the best nickname ever, Boston Strangler, is what they used to call Andrew Toney. It's great. And Jimmy Butler just fit with Philly. And just I don't know. That's just weird.
From the Tobias Harris comments, from what it seemed, because, like, obviously, like, they didn't mention him by name. And what Tobias Harris says, like, we stressed this year on making us five, like, best friends, of, like, building a camaraderie. And trying to establish, you know, chemistry, which to me all screams that Jimmy Butler didn't do that.
Go ahead.
I mean, it could be me reading between the lines or me looking into something that isn't there. But I mean, I know that's what a lot of people on Twitter took it as well. Tobias Harris saying that, like, Jimmy Butler, as good as he was, he didn't buy into the team. He didn't try and, you know, like everybody. He didn't try and, like, build anything aside from Joel Embiid's really good, so I'm going to buddy up with this guy.
Which I got to say, like, I tend to, and I've never had Jimmy Butler as a teammate, and I was laughing because you were saying, you said, you know, they didn't say him by name. I was like, it better not. Jimmy will show up at a scrimmage and take the four ball boys and just play you and win every scrimmage. But it's weird. Like, Jimmy to me is cut from the Kobe cloth, the Chris Paul cloth. Like, not necessarily that we don't have to be buddies, but it's like, I want that conflict. I want you to push me. Like, he dared, you know, he dared Carl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins. He's like, okay, it's your team. You're the max guys. Put me in my freaking place and own this team. And they didn't. And they ran to management and he got traded. And in Philly, I think Jimmy Butler is about winning and a certain way of doing things, right? I mean, he got kind of, he got bagged on. It's like, oh, why would you go to Miami? But, one, he got his money, but two, also Miami as an organization, as a culture, Pat Riley is that same kind of guy. It's like, we do things a certain way. Like, it's a certain way how you approach yourself as a pro. And I think Jimmy, from what I can see about him, is a really good player, a good teammate, and a dude who just wants to win, just a dog. And, you know, it's like, man, forget all this friendship. Let's win. Right. And so right. I just feel, I mean, I hate to get into sports cliches, but I just feel like that's some soft shit when you're like, hey, we want to be friends now. The guys last year weren't being buddies. And I don't think Jimmy was about that. Jimmy's like, let's beat the Raptors and let's get to the finals. Right. And I mean, if you look at stat lines, you know, Jimmy Butler showed up and Tobias Harris didn't necessarily do that. Right. And he was, I made a comment when we were talking about I saw the top 50 list came out, and I, you know, you and I had some fun because Tobias Harris was ranked, and I was like, where's Jimmy Butler? He better be higher than Tobias Harris, bitch ass. Yep. That friend comment was weird to me too. I take it as, yeah, maybe Jimmy wouldn't buddy buddy with everybody in the locker room, but you don't have to be. You don't, I mean, people are worshiping at Kobe for not being buddy buddy, for being an asshole. So I don't know. I thought it was interesting.
I think it's fair. I mean, I think that's fair. You don't, I mean, some of the, I mean, for example, Shaq and Kobe, they didn't love right. each other, right. especially those last couple of years. You don't have to necessarily love your teammates or be best friends with your teammate and have, like, do I think chemistry plays a part? Yes, I do. Do I think talent can outweigh chemistry for a short period of time? I do as well. And that's the difference. Like, I mean, think about it. How do we look at Philadelphia last year if that Kawhi buzzer beater doesn't go in? You know, if Philly wins that game and goes to the NBA Finals, whether they win or lose the NBA Finals, they get there. Are we talking about the same thing? Does Jimmy Butler leave? Maybe he comes back. And do we care about, like, does Tobias Harris and company care about not being buddy-buddy if they have reached the NBA Finals? Like, I feel like probably not.
I feel like they reached the Finals, Butler's back, and Harris is not.
Right.
I think, but that's just me.
No, I think that's fair. I don't think there's anything else I had to say about this media day.
All right.
Any final thoughts for you for this media day? No?
I'm still... So, where do you have Philly in the East?
I think they have 1 seed potential and as low as 4 seed potential. I think they're a home court team. I mean, I don't think... there's just not that many good teams in the East, and I just don't see a way in which... Even if Horford and Embiid on the court at the same time doesn't work, that you can't stagger those minutes in a way, that you still find a lot of production from that core five. And I actually really like the Trey Burke sign. I think Trey Burke's going to be really good for them.
You're not a very big Twin Towers guy, are you, on your court, on your floor spacing? You don't like not too big.
I used to be, but the NBA has taught me that doesn't really work anymore. Let me say this, too. Like, for example, Anthony Davis, DeMarcus Cousins. I was I was hell-bent on that becoming the new way to beat small ball. Was you would get right. two dynamic bigs who can do a little bit of everything. Obviously, Cousins and Davis could both shoot threes as well. And then that would be the kryptonite to the Golden State Warriors, just having those two twin guys that no one can really guard while having a bunch of perimeter shooters. So, like, I don't think... It doesn't work. I just think you have to have an extremely compatible twin tower pairing for it to work. And I'm not positive that Horford at age 34 is that guy next to Joel Embiid. And then to a latter extent, like Miles Turner, Domantas Sabonis, they look good through those two India games where they pretty much beat up the Kings. But I'm still not sure on how those two guys coexist when you're playing against teams going smaller and faster. That's my one issue. And I don't think, for example, like Horford and Sabonis playing power forward, I don't think those guys are overly quick.
Mm-hmm. Well, as long as Turner doesn't have to go up against Gobert with someone, I mean, I don't know. I think he'll be okay. I just
yeah, open the wound. He was really good in the India games.
He absolutely did. Yeah, I think Philly. I agree. I think Philly has one seed potential. I probably have them better than the Bucks. I don't like.
I don't think the Bucks got better. I think they got worse.
I do too. And I think Philly, they didn't really address shooting, and it was already kind of a thing last year or a deficiency last year, not a thing, deficiency last season. But even yet and still, I think top to bottom, that's a better roster than Boston, than Toronto, than Milwaukee. So I assuming health and everything, I think Philly would be my pick out of the East, but I probably wouldn't see them going probably further than three. I don't think I couldn't. Only team I could see them clear cut being worse than is the Milwaukee Bucks. But like you say, I agree. I think the Bucks took a step back. I mean, and Brooke Lopez, geez, a flip. The one thing I did watch in the USA basketball campaign is like, woof, man, I hope I'm just getting all the bad stuff out now because woof, he did not look great. Yeah. So, nor did Chris Middleton. I mean, he had his moments, but I don't know.
See, I saw a photo yesterday from a Bucks fan, and I know we're talking about Philly at the moment, but this was comical to me. It was of Antetokounmpo, Eric Bledsoe, Chris Middleton, and Brooke Lopez. And this Bucks fan said, "This is the best team in the Eastern Conference." And I thought in my head, you really think a big four that includes Brooke Lopez is the best team in the Eastern Conference? And I get it. I mean, they're going to be one or two. And I was kind of just nitpicking at the fact that this guy made it seem like so clear cut. Whereas like Brooke Lopez arguably could like fall off finally. I mean, he's not very fast to begin with. But the fact of the matter was he was shooting 7 to 8 threes a game last year and hitting four of them. So It was just like the offensive output was outweighing the deficiency that he gets played off the court. We kind of saw that in the playoffs even against against Toronto. I mean, they just couldn't keep up. And then you look at the flip side of, like Eric Bledsoe. I mean, is Eric Bledsoe going to be a playoff contributor? I'm not so sure. You look at Philly, and I just the one thing and you mentioned, Philly didn't address the shooting issue, which could be an issue. I mean, the one good thing is Josh Richardson was in a role in Miami that I don't think really suited him because they had him play like a lot of playmaker, a lot of have the offense run through you. You also create, do everything else. I think him playing more of a 3-and-D role for this Philly team should boost his efficiency. I think he only shot like 40 and 39 last year. So I expect him to be better. But the defense for Philly is what stands out. I mean, this could seriously be a team that when we normally see, 120-point games, they're holding guys to barely 100 points. I mean, this could be an extremely deadly defensive unit. The offense is my one big issue with them.
Right. Yeah. And even in offense, I'd narrow that to for me anyway, the support for Embiid. I think the points got to come from somewhere else, right? I think Tobias Harris has to be a 15 to 17 per night guy. I think Horford could probably live in that 12-point range and grabbing rebounds and a few assists feeding to Embiid. And I mean, Simmons, you got like we were talking about at the top. I think Simmons has to contribute as well offensively, not, he doesn't have to turn into, a 20-25-point a game score, but he's got to be a threat offensively. So yeah, I think there are more questions offensively than defensively for Philly for sure.
Yeah. Now another media day that I thought was, I had at least one good quote from it and just like intriguement, which is funny since I already kind of tried to shit on their star player going forward, but the New Orleans Pelicans. Mm-hmm. I kind of like this team. Like, I'm not ready to say playoffs. I'm not there yet. Although I do think the conversation JJ Redick and Zion Williamson had, where JJ was like, "Yo, bro, like, I've never missed the playoffs. Like, don't fuck this up for me." And Zion being like, "Oh shit, like JJ, I'm a rookie. Like, don't put that on me." Right. I think that's funny, and I think Lonzo and Zion is going to be an interesting pairing. I also I'm just not like I've never been out on Lonzo. Like, I was always on the team that, like, Lonzo isn't going to be a superstar like you morons think he is coming into the league, but this can easily be a guy who can run an offense for you. A guy who plays good defense and can run an offense. And that's what I thought mattered when evaluating his game a couple years ago. And that's basically who he is now. The backcourt tangent of him and Drew Holiday could be defensive nightmares for other backcourts. I think Brandon Ingram has easily another step he can take, especially where he's not playing LeBron's shadow or Kobe's shadow, because he's had some big names around him his first couple of years in the NBA. And then, you know, getting a guy like Derek Favors, I think that's a good pickup. Like J.J. Redick, that's a good veteran pickup, a guy who, I mean, has defied the laws of aging for the fact that he's gotten better and better from three-point as he's gotten older. I'm just really intrigued by the Pelicans. Like, I think this could be a really fun team. Like, they play an opening night, and at first I was like, Pelicans, Raptors. Like, I don't want to watch this shit. And then I thought in my head, I was like, bro, the Pelicans actually are fun. Like, you kind of do want to watch this. And this is me having an internal conversation with myself.
There's a lot of, I will just say, sidebar. There's a lot of, seems to be increasingly more Tyler Durden moments with you as you get closer to the season starting, with the internal conversations. Yeah, I think the Pelicans, when you said potential playoff team, I was trying to think of my head, okay, who are the locks in the West? You got three California teams, right? Both LA teams and Golden State, we'll say, are locks. I'd say Denver and Utah are locks. That gets us to five. I say Houston's a lock. That's six. I think, I mean, until further notice, I think Popovich and the Spurs are a lock. That's seven. And then probably Portland is eight. I mean, they've just been on a streak as well. So that's eight teams there that New Orleans has to compete with. And I think the next tier, excuse me, is, of course, Dallas, maybe Sacramento. And I'm trying to think if I'm missing anybody off the top of my head. So there are seven, eight teams that are probably firmly entrenched. So it is an uphill battle for New Orleans. But I do think they'll be fun to watch. I think that I'm like you. I was always higher on Alonzo than I think most people. I think there is such a thing, particularly with point guard, that there's some things that it just takes a little longer to get there in terms of maturation. I think of it like being a quarterback or a cornerback in football. You know, it takes a minute. You know, you can be a running back and start day one because, you know, same thing. It's kind of thing being a big man. Point guard takes a little more time. And so I think Zoe just wasn't quite ready for a lot of things off the court. A lot of injuries early in his career, but like you say, I think right now his defense is at an all-defensive team level. Offense is improving, but I think he's still a playmaker. Not unlike Ben Simmons, I think he needs to be more of a threat offensively, but he's still a playmaker, better defender than Simmons. Like you say, that backcourt between he and Holiday could be fun to watch. Zion Williamson is, you know, like, say, marquee talent already, although I think he's ranked kind of high in some of these preseason rankings as a player. But New Orleans, and I'm a David Griffin fan, and I think, you know, when you are on a, you know, contributing on a website called OTG Basketball, you go deeper than just the players, and so you do have admirations for front offices. So I'm a David Griffin fan, so I'm rooting for him, and I like him, and I always enjoyed his commentary on NBA TV. So I just like the idea of the team sort of righting the ship and it sort of being a win-win for the Pelicans and Griffin coming in and saying, no, it's a great situation. I want to build it this way. And the ownership letting him sort of take the lead with the team. And yeah, they'll be exciting. I mean, I don't know if I'm probably don't have them on a league pass on a short list necessarily. But I think that team is interesting enough to warrant some nationally televised games. I will be keeping an eye on them. Like, I'll watch more Pelican games than I will, you know, like Kings or Mavericks or whatever. You know what I mean? I think they'll be fun to watch. Other
Mavericks,
than the top,
are you tier. Sure Mavericks is? I don't know. You rather watch the Pelicans and Luka Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis?
Yes, I would, because I'm still curious about Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram. I'm really curious to see. And I'm still kind of like, it's a pet project of mine. If you look at my hard drive on my computer, I have stopped and started a number of articles just on the casualties of the process, quote unquote. Like, I'm always curious about guys like Nerlens Noel, Jahlil Okafor, who are the casualties of getting Embiid and Simmons, right? It's like, oh, it's a process. You just get all these eggs in the basket, and sooner or later you'll hit 21, you'll hit blackjack, and then you'll be good. But there are a lot of people that lost a lot of fucking games to get Embiid and Simmons. And I'm always curious about what their careers will turn into. I think Embiid or Okafor was, I think, drafted or and or born a season or two too late, because the game sort of changed right underneath his feet, and now he kind of has a game that's sort of a relic of what the past was.
I will say he did impress me last year when Anthony Davis got benched, or, you know, whatever, when that whole saga started, Jahlil Okafor was getting minutes. I mean, that is a guy, and we'd never really had this concern about him, but he was averaging, you know, like 20 and 10. The defense is still an issue for him. He's just not as I don't think his footwork in the post is very good. I just don't think he knows how to use his body weight and to position himself in ways to actually stop a defender, much like Enes Kanter, who I think is the absolute worst in the as post defense. But yeah, Okafor, like you mentioned, one of those guys who the process gave up on pretty quick. I mean, after 1 year, basically, they were like, you suck. You are not going to be the answer for us. And then we saw him bounce around, and everywhere he went, everyone was like, he's lazy. He doesn't put in the work. And then he went to New Orleans, and he flipped his body. He's been in shape. And actually, something that I've noticed this offseason, which is way off topic, but I think was interesting, is the fact that Anthony Davis, Jrue Holiday, and Jahlil Okafor trained all summer together.
That's great.
I don't know what that means besides that they're friends, but I think it's cool that Okafor, no matter what he did, put himself in a position where, like, no one wanted him on their team, till he found a place where one of the arguably best big men of our league is basically like taking him under his wing in a way. It felt like, you know, like those guys were hanging out a lot. So I think that's cool. I think that's actually bolstered Okafor's stock in my mind.
Yeah, I agree. No. And so real quick, let me get back to you. So you're saying you'd rather, given the choice on League Pass, you'd go Mavericks over Hornets.
Yeah.
Really? No, it's fine. I mean, you know,
I gotta be honest, because I think if Luka Doncic plays like he did last year, he takes a step forward, right? And this guy is a guy who averaged like 21, 8, and 7 last year with very little help around him. So he's back. He looks like he's in shape. He lost, I think, like 15 pounds this offseason. So he's slimmed down. He's in better, I want to say, durability and endurance this season, hopefully. Tim Hardaway Jr., I'm not watching for him in particular. But I'm interested to see, like, what Luka Doncic can bring out of a shooter like that. And then Porzingis. We haven't seen Porzingis in a year and a half.
Yep.
Like, I want to know what Kristaps Porzingis looks like. I want to know if this guy is tough. Because, obviously, in his early Nick days, he could block shots. He could shoot from the perimeter. He could do a little bit of a post-move act, like a post-fade. But he just wasn't that strong yet. He was still kind of weak. And obviously he kept hitting like a rookie wall, sophomore wall, halfway between both of his seasons, he just started to slow down. So where's he at in his third year in the NBA, where he's had a complete year of rehabbing and training in the NBA system, where that was his only focus? He looks ginormous, like an Antetokounmpo type of muscle jump. And I think if there's a possibility that Luka Doncic and Porzingis both average, you know, 20 plus points per game. Luka Doncic averaging near a triple double. Porzingis is averaging, you know, like 24, 11, and like 2 blocks a game. I don't think that's like out of the world of possibility. So I want to see if Porzingis is on the trajectory to be an elite level player, and if Luka Doncic is still on that path as well. Because if both those guys are showing star level talent, then the Dallas Mavericks are in prime position to be, you know, as competitive as they were the entire Dirk era.
Interesting. Okay. Wait, sorry.
Is that a good argument? Was that pretty good?
That was good. No. I can't find any fault in that. You kind of lost me with Tim Hardaway Jr., but
yeah, I don't know why I brought him up. I was the second name I brought up on a Dallas Mavericks plea was Tim Hardaway Jr.
That's a bold move, Cotton. I don't know.
It pays off.
What you made me forget what I was gonna ask you. Did Dirk retire, or what is the
Yeah, Dirk's okay. gone. Yeah, Dirk did okay. retire. He waited until like the last game of the season, I think, to announce it.
Okay, because I didn't. Okay, because I lost that for a second, because I remember there being a thing towards the end of the year. He's like, I haven't retired yet. And everybody's like, oh, shit. We've been kind of calling it a farewell tour.
Yeah.
Okay.
He didn't want the farewell tour, though. So I think that's why he didn't announce it. Like, and that's why he was, like, candid about it. He didn't want to do, like, the Wade tour. Some guys, you know, and it's each their own. You know, Kobe's farewell tour, Wade's farewell tour. You know, some guys like the attention, the spotlight of, you know, just celebrating the career they had. Dirk just, it just wasn't for him. And I also think probably at least halfway through the year, he thought, like, I can maybe play in a year again as, like, you know, a bench guy for 10 minutes. But then he realized, I think, watching tape of him running down the court, that he just has to stop running around the court. Because it was my biggest cringe last year was any Dallas Mavericks game where Dirk was in and running. And I was like, oh, God, stop. I don't know. It just looks like you're in pain. Looks like something's going to break. Just be easy out there, big fella.
Coasted in, yep.
Yeah, but he's retired, but he's been around the team. I know Porzingis and Dirk have spent a lot of time together. Like, Dirk pretty much took Porzingis under his wing because, I mean, their play styles are very similar.
Yep. Okay, you know, you've convinced me to watch more. I think I'd probably still take New Orleans, but you've convinced me to watch more Mavericks games. Growing up in West Texas, that was, you know, the biggest city was Dallas, so we got all the Dallas sports on our local Fox Sports channel. So it was the Mavericks of the Jason Kidd and Jim Jackson and Jamal Mashburn days. So, yeah, no. There's some connection there with the Mavericks. It's funny you say with retirement tour, just made me think, this is totally off topic, but Jeff Perlman's book Showtime about the Showtime Lakers talks about when Kareem does his farewell tour in 88, 89, I think it was, that the only cities that were really sort of showing him love were New York, because he's from New York, Milwaukee as we started his career, and then LA, of course. But the rest of the league, they were just kind of like whatevs and kind of cold to it. I mean, they give him stuff, but like, he's just such a big dick in the media, like for 20 some odd years. And he's rehabbed that in recent years. But like, when he was a player, oh man, apparently, like, and I think even I read the story once with the Lakers, like Magic wanted to get guys to chip in and get him a Rolls Royce, and his teammates, right? Laker teammates. And none of them gave any money. Like, Magic ended up buying the Rolls himself for Kareem.
I would never have thought he was a dick.
Oh, he was a dickhead. Like, so many, I mean, way off top, we're not talking old Lakers, but yeah, I mean, it's changed a lot in the last few years. Found a little levity, I think, to his life. But yeah, he was an odd duck. But also, too, it's also fascinating because Kareem was 7 feet tall in like the ninth grade. And, you know, he's growing up in the 60s. And it's like, so I can imagine what he dealt with, like being that kid at that time. And then what he grew up with, sort of shaping him as a person. But yeah, as a player and as a pro. Oh, yeah. They're tremendous stories. Somebody, I forgot, Bob Ryan said, no man's an island, but Kareem was close, I think, is what his quote was one time. But yeah, it was, his farewell tour did not go as he had hoped, I think. But
one more thing I want to say on farewell tours, which is somewhat off topic again, but like, I also feel like there are, you know, guys get farewell tours and they do them now. But like, a part of me, like, can you imagine what Kobe would have thought about a farewell tour in the prime of his career? Like, is there where Kobe goes, oh yeah, that's all. Like, if Kobe after the 09 championship, someone's doing a farewell tour. You think Kobe's like, yeah, farewell tours are cool? Do you think Kobe's like, what is this shit? So I feel like Kobe, I don't know where I'm going with this, really.
I think he's the former. I think he respects it because I think Kobe's such a student of the game. I think he's okay with the farewell.
I think it goes against what Kobe stands for, the fact like, you're out here to play and win, and like, everything else doesn't matter. So like, I think someone like who's not playing for anything, like being celebrated, I think would like rub prime Kobe the wrong way.
Probably so. I was going to say, yes, prime Kobe, but I was going to say old Kobe didn't have a problem with it when the Jazz let him score 60 and didn't guard him. Like,
right, yeah. Kobe had completely changed because he was, I mean, like I said, I think about a game against Philly where he shot 1 for 19 from three, and the first three of the game, he had just walked the car across half court and just launched it up, and I was just like, wow, this is the kind of fuck you game Kobe's on.
You're right, but yeah. Kobe, yeah. Mamba Kobe, yeah, that is true. That I agree. I mean, you're probably right. Like, Kobe's probably like, I'm not for that. When he, yeah, so early Kobe, late 90s to early 2000s would have been, hey, student of the game, that's great. Sort of post 2005 to 2009, 10 Kobe, where it's mama mentality, I don't have friends, love me or hate me, Kobe, I'm an assassin. Yeah, he'd probably been like, no, I'm here to murder you. That's not what you're here for. Yeah. I shoot left-handed when my hands hurt instead of just coming out of the game like a fucking normal human being.
Pop my finger back in, whatever.
Right. Yeah,
back in.
So I agree with you. Yeah. So depending on when you caught Kobe, that's actually right. Yeah, I think that's fair that Kobe would have scoffed at it and showed it as some kind of, you know, preyed on it as some kind of weakness.
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel. He would have been like, wow, you're so soft. You care more about your farewell tour than beating me and winning
your stupid dance recital instead of trying to win this game.
her priorities were elsewhere. So the New York Knicks had a media day.
Knickerbockers.
I know Knicks fans are like happy. They're optimistic. I'm not sure what their optimism is, but this is a team that's got some nice young talent. They got some vets along the roster. Marcus Morris was already quoted saying, like, we're not going to let people come in here and think it's going to be easy. Like, we're not going to roll over. We're going to play every night hard, and we're going to have guys out there that show that. And granted, you know, when you have guys like Marcus Morris and Taj Gibson on the roster, you're definitely having two guys, and Bobby Portis even. Can't forget Crazy Eye Portis. guys in which who have a chip on their shoulder, play with some aggression. Like, this Knicks team is definitely going to have some dogs out there. I still worry for the fact that I don't want those guys taking too many minutes from the young guys. But then you hear Fizdale say, you know, we think that having all these veterans in will push the younger guys to want to play better, to play for more meaningful minutes. Which, like, yes, I get the philosophy, but that philosophy can also turn into the fact that the young guys just aren't playing and you're playing these vets who mean nothing.
Right. It's weird with the Knicks, right? Because I thought, and the similar thing happens to the Lakers, where the Knicks had a plan, right? They got rid of Porzingis. They had the two max slots. They were hearing rumblings that they could get a shot at some of the top free agents. And you have to go for it, right? Nothing else has worked for 25 years. Why not, you know, try something different outside the box? And it didn't land like you wanted it to land. But that's the whole point of the Knicks, without ever really coming out and saying that they were, you know, process acolytes or going into the process or tanking or anything like that, which they clearly were, by the way. To try to get Zion and to have the max slots open. They tried it and it didn't work. And I thought that was fine. I mean, it only becomes a story because it's the Knicks, in the same way with the Lakers. We like to point and laugh at the Knicks as NBA Twitter is wanting to do.
And James Dolan said we were never considering Kevin Durant.
You're
a bullshit liar, bro. Everyone's looking at Kevin Durant.
Right, and everyone would have signed him. No team, any team, if Kevin Durant says, look, I'm coming there. Yes, you know you don't have me for this year. You know, yeah, Dolan was trying to say. So that's what I was going to say. Like, on the one hand, I think the plan, they were trying something. They were on the path of like, okay, we got RJ Barrett. That's not a bad piece to build around. We still have all this cap space. And I thought where they screwed it up and where they went Knicks was with Dolan in that statement, which was fucking stupid. And also as a signal to any player, again, why would I come there? Well, that's still the owner of the team. And then two, they did sign like every power forward that was available. I just thought it was weird. Like, to your point a second ago, you know, you got the young guys. Okay, you swung and you kind of missed, but why not build up this young talent a la the Brooklyn Nets? Shout out to the Brooklyn Buzz. Build up the young talent, get these guys minutes, keep your powder dry for a season or two, let RJ Barrett get minutes as an NBA player, and then you try again the next summer. Or you have that cap space if guys are expiring contracts, if guys want to move around. Like, I didn't see the need. I thought the misstep from a front office standpoint was burning up some of that cap space just to get guys on the roster. Now, granted, they needed players because they, you know, got rid of everybody for the max slots. But I thought that was the only misstep, and I think that's gonna be the issue where they can't get out of their own way. To your point, we're gonna see a season of, you know, are these older vets getting the minutes, sort of like the Lakers were last year? It's like, we need the young guys to play, but, you know, we got Moore signed and we got, you know, Porter signed. I think they got in their own. I mean, it was a plan, it was working, and I think they got too distracted by the headlines this offseason. They signed all these power forwards, and now there's gonna be a fight for minutes, I think. And I just, man, it was working. Like, don't get discouraged, New York. It's like, to hell with what everybody says. They're going to laugh at you anyway. Just stay the course. I don't know.
This offseason's only a win for me for the Knicks is if, for example, the logjam at power forward. I mean, all of these guys are on short deals. Right. None of them are a lot of money. So, right. You know, for a plan B strikeout of, damn, we didn't get any max players, we didn't get Zion, but we're going to get as many role players that mean something as we can. You know, Wayne Ellington, Reggie Bullock, Elfrid Payton, Bobby Portis, Taj Gibson, Marcus Morris. Like, all of these guys, there will be contenders calling for them by the deadline.
That's true.
And the thought is, what can you get in return? Who knows? But if you can ship off half of these guys then and get some sort of asset, whether it's, you know, second-round draft picks, first-round draft picks, whatever the case may be, or in a couple expirings, then it isn't a complete loss. Like, the plan B is not bad as long as it's executed correctly, right?
Right.
Your plan A failed. Your plan B so far is okay. You went after all the rope. Like, for example, like Wayne Ellington, there's at least 10 contenders I can think of top of my head that could use a shooter like Wayne Ellington. A guy like Bobby Portis, I think Bobby Portis has more value than people realize. Marcus Morris as well. So if they can trade these guys, then I don't think plan B is a fail. But the issue is, even if plan B is trading those guys off, if you spend the first half of the season only playing these vets while the rookies are on the bench not getting time, then I still think plan B is partially a fail, because why are you wasting any time of these young guys getting runs and getting development and getting NBA experience?
Yeah, I agree. And you're right. I think the plan B is actually, it's strong, like you say. Provided, so I like the blueprint of the plan. I guess sort of wait and see on the execution, if that makes sense. To see, you know, I think they're probably going the right way, but I guess I'm kind of waiting to see of how they actually pull it off and if they have the, I don't know, the patience, I guess, to sort of stay the course on it, or will they do something crazy and, you know, I don't know, sign Melo back for, you know, $40 million or something like that, or I don't know.
And the Melo story really died down quick, huh? The whole I'm being blackballed.
Yeah, no, that's still strange to me. I still feel like he should be. Anything from the Knicks? Any quotes or anything stuck out from you? Anything from the media day other than
Julius Randle? I like Randle. I actually really do like Julius Randle. I think it's a guy who, you know, obviously him breaking his leg his first year. I think some people just like kind of forgot he did, because then his second year was his rookie year, and it kind of just was a little bit of a slow start. You know, I think Randle's got a ton of potential, and he's gotten better and better every year. Last year with the Pelicans, obviously, became a guy who you could rely on to score 20 points per game. A guy who can rebound at a high click. A guy who can even run the fast break a little bit on his own. Like, it's a guy who, with the Lakers a few times, would catch a rebound and then bring it up himself. Like, he's got tendencies in his game where he can play a little bit of a facilitator as much as he can play a power forward. He can play small ball five. His only issue is that he just isn't a very good defender. The three-point shot got better last year. So him and the praise that he had for Mitchell Robinson is what stuck out. He was like, I'm so excited to play against a center defensively minded as Mitchell Robinson. I think our games will complement each other very well. And I kind of agree. I'm not a huge fan of Julius Randle at the four, only because his lateral quickness, and if he's not shooting threes effectively, then that's two guys on the floor with him and Mitchell Robinson who can't shoot threes. But defensively, Mitchell Robinson's, you know, he's right there in my mind with Rudy Gobert, Miles Turner as elite rim protectors. You know, like, if you're going to go into the paint and Robinson's out there, you have to understand that there's a good chance you're going to get blocked. So I just like the fact that Randle was so excited to play with Mitchell Robinson. And then Dennis Smith Jr., I'm also excited for the fact that he put in a lot of work. And he has a New York mentality, I should say. He was warming up, or I don't know if you saw, he was practicing in a bulletproof vest the other day at Knicks training camp. Granted, maybe a little bit much. Maybe you got shooters on the lookout. We don't know. But the fact of the matter is the man was working out in a bulletproof vest. And if that's not New York, I don't know what is.
I see your Timberlands, Patrick Beverly, on the beach, and I raise you a bulletproof vest. I mean, that was, I see your MMA training, and I raise you a bulletproof vest. Again, yeah, I don't know. I feel like there should be a conversation. Well, I was going to say, I feel like there should be a conversation about that, but I mean, what can you say? I mean, he's working, I don't know, like.
It's a little bit heavier, right? Is that the mindset?
I remember the East. I don't know if you grew up with the East Bay catalog. Yeah, they used to have the training vests and the shooting and the jump shoes and all that shit. I try to get my parents to buy
it. It was a training vest, but it was all black, and it definitely did look like a bulletproof vest.
Oh no, it's probably some shit from Bad Boys 3. I'm sure it was. No, for sure.
He just got off a cameo appearance in Bad Boys 3. That's what it was. He had to go right to practice from the cameo.
And I know we talk about this on the outlet, but since we mentioned it earlier with the Mavericks, given that KD is not playing for the Nets, are you more interested in catching Knicks games or Nets games this season?
I'm still more interested in the Nets. They're playing for more, right? I mean, big picture in mind, these guys are gaining experience, the young guys in particular. We want to know if Kyrie is a cancer or not. I mean, I think this will be a defining moment of Kyrie Irving's career, this stretch in Brooklyn, not just this year, but next year as well. I mean, we're going to be able to really establish what kind of guy Kyrie Irving is. You know, is he a problem? Is he a good leader? I think we all those questions get answered this year and next year. You know, then the young guys, you know, Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, Joe Harris, do these guys get better? They looked really good in their first preseason game. You know, they could score. They were scoring points in bunches. Granted, they're playing like Chinese teams and like Asia teams, and those teams just suck ass. Like Houston. I mean, let's be real. That first Houston preseason game, it was like 111-40. Like what are we doing?
I love how that was like, James Harden's previewing his new move, and he's just kind of fucking around because it was like China, and he's like, whatever.
And also, I saw someone trying to break down that move, like. Before I get your thought on the move. So the move to what I'm talking about is James Harden in the corner, and he takes one dribble and then does a fade off one leg. Well, like a running fade off one leg where his left foot is still facing the rim, but his right leg is extended towards the baseline out of bounds. And then I saw someone breaking it down. Well, if you look at the positioning of his body, the right leg being extended outwards actually increases his stability with his hips. And he's actually lining up better with his hip flip. Okay, motherfucker. We are not going to have James Harden doing one-leg runners in games that actually matter. Right. Let's relax. even if it does flare up his hips and he gets a little bit more centered on the hoop, James Harden doing one-legged runners is not going to be a shot that we see to a high click. It will be a shot when they're up like 15 or 20 that maybe he whips out. I do not see this move being a serious move. And if it is a serious move, I don't know. He hasn't made one of these shots yet in any clip I've seen.
Oh gosh. I was thinking I would never, like, as a teammate, I would go up to him and be like, bro, well, it'd probably have to be Westbrook or somebody. I don't know. Anybody, Capella, anyone.
It would have to be Westbrook.
Like, hey man, don't shoot that shit. Like, I mean, like, don't.
Oh my god, can you imagine Chris Paul still on this roster and James Harden does that one time? Chris Paul's losing it.
To your point, it's not a move. Like, that's not a move. Like, that's not a. Oh my god, I was not impressed with it by any stretch. I mean, I think of skyhook, fadeaway jumper. You know, up and under, dream shake. Those are moves. Those are moves I can go to it. I can get a bucket on it, whatever. that shit. No, I'm sorry. That was trolling the Chinese basketball team, I think. I mean, God.
Yeah. That's what it felt like to me. But he did it in the next game too, against, can't remember who they played after. They played two games so far. And he's done it in both games at least once.
Put it this way. If they find themselves in the Western semis against Golden State, I doubt he will break it out in that game.
True.
Doesn't put it that way. Or, you know, if he's got Kawhi on him in the Western Conference Finals, I don't want that to. Yeah, I'm hoping that he doesn't bring that out. What? Well, since you brought the worlds together here, I was about to say
we segued perfectly.
Very lovely segue, my friend. You are turning into a pro at this. Chinese basketball, Houston Rockets. As someone who practically grew up in Houston, both for college and law school, and started working in Houston and been a Rockets fan. Being in Houston during the Yao Ming era, and just Houston being such an international city, the tie between the Rockets and China is very strong. I would argue the strongest in the NBA, just from, like, say, drafting Yao Ming, very strong, vibrant Chinese population in the city of Houston. And over Twitter, of all places, and I don't know how many basketball fans are also keeping up with all the news that comes on through Twitter. Twitter is where I get my news. So you see basketball, but also things going around the world. Protesters in Hong Kong fighting, you know, what they believe is a very oppressive regime in China. And I think no matter where you fall on the line on that, I think objectively you can say that that is a factual statement. So Daryl Morey, GM of the Houston Rockets, and sort of, I guess, gatekeeper of that relationship with China, had a tweet where he sent out a shot that said, "Fight for freedom, stand with Hong Kong." As you might imagine, that ruffled some feathers within the Chinese government, Chinese Basketball Association. There's a big firestorm within the Chinese community, large at large, and also with the Chinese basketball community over Morey's tweet. Morey since deleted the tweet. Tillman Fertitta, the latest owner of the Houston Rockets, who, I mean, in all transparency, hasn't really 100% seen eye to eye with Daryl Morey on, I think I would say, on sort of how he runs the team and sort of decisions. I mean, I think they show a united front. I mean, he, Chris Paul, and Morey were all at the ESPYs, and what riff, and then subsequently they traded Chris Paul, so, you know, take for that what it's worth. Fertitta tweeted, after the since deleted tweet, he said, "Listen, at Daryl Morey does not speak for the Houston Rockets. Our presence in Tokyo is all about the promotion of the NBA internationally, and we are not, all caps, a political organization." Latest news, I just saw that the Chinese Basketball Association, a story I was reading, that they have withdrawn their marketing and association with the Rockets for Morey's tweet. Says Chinese Basketball Association won't work with Houston Rockets after controversial tweet. CBA halts cooperation with team over quote-unquote improper remarks by its general manager in social media posts supporting Hong Kong protesters. Chinese sportswear brand Li-Ning, Tencent's online sports channel, and the club's sponsor in China, Shanghai Pudong Development Bank, all follow suit. Corey, what the hell, bro?
Okay, so I want to say, first off, that you've clarified this story for me massively, because I, from what I was seeing on Twitter yesterday, there was more backlash to what Tillman said than to what Morey said. Like, there was people calling for Tillman to be removed as owner from the Rockets.
Ooh, that, like, well, let's put a pin in that, because that could get interesting. So let's take it from both angles, but keep going.
All right, so I'll hold on to Tillman stuff. I'll go back to what you were saying. So, wow. I mean, I'm all for, obviously, it's...
I'm for freedom.
I'm for freedom of speech, and I'm for freedom. Daryl Morey, obviously, is about freedom as well. It's about freedom of speech. And he decided to use his platform to post the message of "We stand with Hong Kong," which, I have no issue with that. They're fighting for what they think is right. If Daryl Morey aligns with that, then I think that's okay. But when you are a part of a multi-million-dollar business and entity in the Houston Rockets, some things need to be calculated before you just hit send with a tweet. And we're clearly seeing that for the fact that they've lost how many sponsors or what partner? They've lost more than one partnership?
The streaming partnership that broadcasts the games, the online sports channel, sportswear brand, and then the development bank.
So they've lost basically a handful of endorsers and partnership.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which affects whose pockets? Tillman's. Mm-hmm. And also somewhat affects his Daryl Morey's pockets in case in which he might not have a job. Mm-hmm. Man, I don't, this, it's messy. I mean, anytime someone tries, I mean, this is the issue with anything, you know, you put a viewpoint out there, and you make a stance, and you're going to have people with you and you're going to have people against you. Except in this position and where Maury and Tillman are, when you make a mistake like that, it ends up costing you millions of dollars. And like you said, Houston being one of those big time, or the Rockets in particular, being one of those big time teams that China and Japan really gets behind because of their, you know, Yao Ming presence in the past. I mean, the ramifications are pretty bad for the Rockets losing money. Yeah.
So that's interesting. So two things. One, so I think there's this, the Furtado side, which I'd love to talk about some more, and the Maury side. On the Maury side, where he messes up is, I mean, it's ironic, right? Because the thing that we hold dear in this country, you know, forget freedom of speech and the Constitution. The one thing that I argue that we universally respect as a capitalist nation is the dollar, right? Like, if you don't like something that a person says on CNN or Fox News or MSNBC, you boycott, right? To get the sponsors to take money away. That's how you believe. That's the only thing we respect in this country. Not human rights, not whatever. It's money. Like, fumbling the bag, not fumbling the bag, taking money away. It's the one thing that universally, I would argue, we respect as a nation, you know, across race, color, creed, orientation, et cetera, et cetera. So where Maury messed up, and if you've gone to a Rockets game and you know how they have the billboards on the scores table, a lot, I would say more than half, are for Chinese companies doing business in the States. Like, that's what the whole scroll is at a Rockets game, right? It's a huge, I'd say maybe with the exception of Los Angeles, maybe New York, a huge, huge, huge Chinese American presence in Houston. I mean, there's a Chinatown in Houston. I've been there many a times. So, you know, Maury messes up by fumbling the bag. Now, I get it. Free speech, private corporation can do what they want, but he's talking about a communist China, which means all this shit is state-run, right? So if the People's Republic doesn't like what you're saying, Maury, guess what? Those other companies are going to, you know, get in line and pull out their sponsorships. And I like you, like what you said at the top. On the one hand, Maury, he didn't say, like, the Rockets stand with Hong Kong or anything like that. He just he tweeted from his own personal account, his own feelings about it. Inopportune as hell to make that statement now, I guess. And I would argue, as a GM of the Rockets, you know, he probably held to a little higher standard of not tweeting such things or making such statements. But at the same time, on the other end of that, what's interesting, I would love to hear what the traffic is on Furtado's comments, because he's like, hey, he basically said stick to sports, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, stick to sports, you could argue that he implicitly is supporting the oppression in by the Chinese government. And if some people are saying far enough to say, oh, Furtado should be removed from the governorship, I mean, I could see the argument of what's the difference in Donald Sterling private conversations costing him his team, and Furtado, I mean, although I don't think he's necessarily saying this, but you could argue Furtado supporting, you know, the People's Republic of China and, you know, oppressive. Political regime. So what's been the chatter on Furtado's response, and what have people been saying about him?
Well, I will say Furtado, you know, he quote tweeted Daryl Morey's tweet in that. So not only did he say Guy Maury does not speak for the Houston Rockets, but he also presented the tweet in which he was speaking of. And obviously, yes, Maury did delete his tweet, but, you know,
screen grabs are forever.
Exactly. And I think the point with Tillman, of what I've seen, is, yes, there's him saying, him being so loud and having to make it a point that these thoughts do not speak for the Houston Rockets. Like you said, one, it gives off the vibe of, I don't give a fuck of what they're fighting for Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that's the Donald Sterling comparison that you made. It's the fact that he doesn't care about what the people are doing. He's concerned about his bag. He's concerned about his money and the fact that Maury speaking out is going to influence his pockets. And I think that's the biggest issue, because a lot of people are saying that he should be removed for the fact that he's okay with the, you know, the unfairness, the dictatorship of what's going on in Hong Kong, rather than caring about people having, you know, their say and their freedom and fighting for what they think is right. So I think that's what has been the negative side for Tillman. But at the same time, as Tillman, who is, you know, an entrepreneur, a very successful businessman, I do understand. I mean, not that I agree with him, but I understand in his mind, he's thinking like, Maury, you're affecting the business, which is, you know, it's not personal, but it's business. And that's the side where Tillman's, you know, makes the tweet casting it, you know, as not the Rockets' thoughts, which obviously didn't do them any good because they still lost all the partnerships. But yeah, the call is just for Tillman to be removed for what I'm assuming would be because he doesn't care about what's going on in Hong Kong and he rather care about his pockets.
And it's funny. First of all, I think I called him Furtado twice. So sorry, Tillman Fertitta.
Furtado.
He had a comment to ESPN's Tim McMahon where he says, look, I have the best general manager in the world. Everything is fine with Daryl and me. We got a huge backlash, and I wanted to make clear that the organization has no political position. We're here to play basketball and not offend anybody. So as a Deadspin article quotes or continues, that Tillman Fertitta didn't have a problem or didn't have a problem expressing his political views when he said that the Bushes were the most extraordinary political family in American history. He said Donald Trump is doing a great job. He bitched about giving his employees health care. He bitched again about giving them minimum wage. And he said socialism, quote, scares the hell out of him. So, and also, by the way, Fertitta hosts luncheons to keep Senate Republicans in their seats and keep the majority. So, now then that becomes a question. Out. Oh, go ahead.
No, get him out. That's
no, yeah. So it's funny because, you know, in the one, and this has always been like the thing with owners, right? Like stick to sports and keep, you know, and I've always, you know, and I'm not breaking any news here, but I've always argued that when people say stick to sports and don't talk politics, what people really mean is don't talk politics I don't agree with, right?
Yeah.
As long as you're talking about the shit I agree with, I'm cool with it. I just don't want you to talk about the stuff I don't agree with, right? So, I mean, we're getting off the rails here a little bit, but you know, the Colin Kaepernick, right? Like, you know, if it's about, like, you keep the politics out, et cetera, et cetera, the national anthem at sporting events in and of itself is a political act, right? That's politics, right? That is a, that's, you know, whether or not you agree with it, like having that sort of allegiance to the nation before a recreational sporting event is a political statement. Us not going to the Olympics in 1980s is a political statement. The Russians not coming to Los Angeles in 84 for the Olympics is a political statement. Like that's always, you know, Jesse Owens at the Berlin Games is a political statement, right? So this idea that, you know, sports and politics don't, you know, mix and go hand in hand is inaccurate. That's not true. Like they always 100%. Have. I mean, I think they shouldn't. I think that there's no reason for us, in my opinion, to even do the anthem at a game. I don't know why we do it. There's no point to it. But anyways, so Fertitta to have his sort of opinions espoused and what his political beliefs are, so long as he's doing it not as the Rockets, I think that's fine. And likewise, I think Maury, if he's doing it not as the Rockets, but as a person who believes in civil liberties, I don't see what the big deal is, except that he's messing with the money. That's the problem. That's what trumps it. You can't fumble the bag, my guy. That's where Maury runs into trouble, right?
Cause right.
It, you know,
and from know. What and from everything you just said about Tillman, it's clear that Tillman's about his money,
right?
If he doesn't want to pay employees what healthcare and stuff like that, means he's already stingy about his money. So the fact that Maury cost him 4 partnerships, endorsements, whatever, that money now is not going into the business. So healthcare is off the table, boys. Everybody, just if you get sick, you might as well come into work. We ain't helping. But yeah, no, that's. It's also ironic now knowing Tillman's complete background. It gives context when you realize certain things. But I do agree that, you know, the stick to your lane argument that gets brought up, what feels like time and time again, whenever people don't agree with what you think, it's comical to me. It just shows where we are. I mean, we're all people. We all have different thoughts and opinions. The fact of the matter is, we have yet to reach the point in civilization where you can really have an opinion that someone disagrees with and it doesn't start some sort of commotion.
Right. You know, I think, and it's weird when it's, I don't know. I always find it odd when it finds its way in the sports. Cause I get like, on the one hand, I get the idea of, sports are escape for people. I don't want this in my face, et cetera, et cetera. But I also understand athletes using platforms to bring awareness to certain things, right? Like, where else would I tell you this, right? This is, right. You know, if I do something at the Super Bowl, there are literally a billion people watching this. If not here, where would I do it, right? What would I draw attention to? Because what people are really saying, I would argue when they say stick to sports is just shut up and play, right? I don't see you as a person, but just as commodity for my entertainment, a gladiator, you know, to sustain me and entertain me for a couple hours. So interesting. And also, I think one last thing on this, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that Morey and Tillman Fertitta, I mean, I just don't know if this marriage is long for this world. And it wouldn't be crazy to me if Morey's like, look, I need the cash before I go. So fire me, man. Just get rid of me. And right. He's like, you know what, man, you can quit whenever you want, go, you just, you know. And so I wonder if this is a standoff to to see if Morey will leave, or if Fertitta will just say screw it, I'm gonna get my own guy in, I'll show you what's what. I think there are a lot of places that would take Morey, and Morey's been in Houston for like 15 years, so that's a long time for any job, I think. So I think he wants to get out of there, but I don't think he wants to leave money on the table. So
right.
If Morey is a general manager next year, if the Rockets don't win the championship, I will be surprised. Put it that way.
Yeah, it should be. This will be interesting to see how this further plays out, especially, let's say, if the Rockets stumble out of the gate. I wonder how tight the leash is right now, or how short the leash is for Daryl Morey right now.
And how effective, though, but like – I mean, coaching changes I get, trading players I get. Like, it's weird to fire a GM in the middle of the season, right? Like, what? That's strange, right? Or no?
No, because then the Suns fired their GM like 3 weeks into the season last year. Well, granted, it's right. It's the Suns. I think more or less you either get fired as a GM near the end of the season or after the season ends.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
But I don't know. I honestly, if this team stumbles, I really think the leash is super tight, especially with, I mean, we don't know the exact figures of how much money the Rockets are going to lose with all these guys canceling their partnerships. But, you know, I can only imagine that they're, you know, the Chris Paul, Daryl Morey and Tillman, you know, tension was non-existent, you know, quote unquote. The Daryl Morey Tillman tension is non-existent once again, quote unquote. There's tension. They're walking on eggshells.
Yeah, I agree. Before
you know, we got this with.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I was gonna go ahead. I stepped on you.
Well, no. Go ahead. What do you got? What do you got?
I was gonna say we gotta wrap it up with the OJ Simpson tweet that you were talking about.
Oh yes. Well, that's exactly what I wanted to talk about.
Well, let's do it, my friend.
So, OJ Simpson, as we know, he deleted the tweet.
Oh, damn it.
Whoa. He had to delete it. Let me tell you, it wasn't. All right. So OJ Simpson, we know him as the tweeter of tweets. Very, very good takes. He loves to talk about AB giving legal advice. congrats Frank Gore on a Hall of Fame career last week. So there was a tweet and he goes, just got my new Nike glove. Been killing it on the course.
Perfect.
And it was just like, ah, man, you had to bring up a glove tweet. And like, I don't, he deleted it since. So I got to think, was it a conscious effort to like cause a little rust, like a little rub, like, haha, fuckers. Like, don't think I forgot that I got away with murder, because I did not. I know damn well what I did.
If anybody knows, I know, right?
Yeah. It was just like, I wish I could find the actual tweet. The tweet was just like, wore a new Nike glove today, was killing it on the course, fits perfect. Or so, like, it was like one of those, like, wow, like, you are just.
That's a troll, right? That's a troll tweet. Like someone dared him to tweet that, right? Like, that, Like, he has to know. Like, that's too, like, the glove fits. It's a glove. He's killing it. Like, he's got to know, right? Like, that.
I wonder if it was a troll now. I wonder if it wasn't even him. Now, that's my concern now. But I'm pretty sure it was from his account. Or, yeah, it had to be from his account.
Well, did it start out with, "Hey, Twitter world"?
Well, no, it wasn't a video. It was just a tweet.
I've only seen him do the videos. I haven't seen him do a tweet before.
See, so maybe this was one of those spoof accounts, and I got spoofed.
Oh, damn it. Damn it.
That would be disappointing. So OJ didn't, maybe OJ didn't make a glove tweet.
Look, now we're on the list because you got on this damn pod and said OJ's making murder jokes.
I'm reading the tweet right now. It's from the other account. And this is how the tweet reads. "Killed it on the golf course today. New Nike glove worked like a charm." Damn, it's upsetting. I really thought he was out there just like fuck you guys. I did it. Shit. It's over. I'm past my years. Can't trial me again, bitch. No double jeopardy.
So to everyone listening to Full Access Hoops, if we don't hear from Corey next week, we'll know that word got back to the juice. And
hello, Twitter world. I just took care of a liar.
Giving legal advice. Damn it, Corey. You put us all in danger.
So there wasn't actually any great OJ Simpson content.
No, that's great. That's even better. That is even better. I like it. Okay, so we got, I guess real quick, any, the season coming up, in 2 weeks, anything, coming out with the, preseason, any matchups you're looking forward to, anything that, I mean, I know it's preseason, anything coming up that you are particularly interested in, or just rocking until the season starts?
Just rocking until the season starts. I actually don't even watch preseason, a lot of it. I just watch some of the highlights, some of the clips I see. I watch most of the Pacers game, but that's my team, so that's a little bit different.
Yeah.
I don't put too much stock. I was intrigued with a lot of the Laker highlights last night.
Yeah.
Seeing LeBron and Anthony Davis on the court together just seems surreal. Like, I always love the first month of the season where you, like, it's still, like, every time you turn a team on, they're on a different team. Like, you know, AD to the Lakers, I'm going to feel the same way with Kawhi and Paul George on the Clippers. Like, it just doesn't feel real the first month of the season when you see these guys in different uniforms, especially, like, this year. I can only imagine, because every time you watch a game, you're going to see a new player on a different team. So, like, that's exciting. I really like point guard LeBron James. The way he ran the offense last night, obviously I think they still need some more shooters, but I just like it. I just think that's going to help LeBron sustain his back end of his career, that he's not going to have to be so reliant on his offensive game. If he can use his basketball IQ to pick his spots, when to score, and then get other guys involved, I think that's when LeBron's at his best. So I was intrigued by that. And then also an Avery Bradley update, because this is an Avery Bradley stain pod at the moment. Not great last night. 0-3, took two long twos, which not great. And I already saw people tweeting Avery Bradley lost his job in 4 minutes last night.
So. I saw that too. It's weird. I was thinking about that this morning before we got ready for the pod. Like, I was kind of, I caught some of the Laker highlights. I was between that and there was some, I was watching some baseball because I only watch playoff baseball. So didn't catch all the Lakers game, but I saw some highlights. And I'm coming to the realization that definitely for preseason, maybe for the regular season, that Twitter's not the spot for Lakers feedback. Like, if I don't catch the game, I'm probably better off just going to a pod or reading something that Karen wrote or something like that, because you know, it's like, oh my God, Dwight Howard looks terrible. Look at that shitty hook. I'm like, well, okay. Avery Bradley lost it. You know, it's so geared towards making fun of the Lakers for whatever reason, or, you know, the Lakers stands are in full force as well too. On the pod, we have a few avowed stands on the staff. So it's just never a good gauge of what happened, right? It's all like spin on Twitter, I feel like. And so it's a hard place to just go to, like, oh, I missed the game. How'd it go? it's like LeBron sucks ass, or it's like LeBron is the greatest, you idiots, he came with Anthony Davis and now they're unstoppable, they're 82-0. And I just feel like, I just want to know how people look objectively. Like what, like who, how did it go, right? What did it look like? I'm finding it hard to find after one preseason game.
I 100% agree. And also, headband LeBron James may be back.
I saw that. I did see that.
That's kind of interesting. Big headband. Got to have a big one. Like he likes to get the like two headbands in one headband.
Which made me miss the ninja style bands already. I'm like, damn it, those were fun. So
So it's entertaining. Final thoughts.
Nothing. We're just inching closer to the season. I'm always hoping that NBA didn't quite have the same problem as the NFL, where after a week you got guys like in the infirmary, right? Knock on wood, but. I really think this is just going to be an open season with a lot of possibilities. So as we get closer and closer, it's like you got that Fabergé egg in the backseat. It's like, God, just don't screw up with a knee or a broken foot or something. I'm just really praying for health for the season, because I just think there's so many storylines, so many possibilities. And we had a crazy summer, crazy offseason, and I just can't wait for it to get started. Usually people make the joke about the NBA starting on Christmas Day. That's when most of America starts to tune in. But I think people will be more engaged earlier this season than have been in years past, just because I think it's so wide open and so many storylines. So my final thought is just fingers crossed for health for the next couple of weeks, bro, until we get it tipped off and going.
Final thoughts for me as well. Fingers crossed on health. And I actually think my 5 years in depthly watching the NBA, this may be the most hyped I've ever been for an NBA season. Mm-hmm. Whether it's the fact that I'm more so into the work that goes into it, like podcasting, writing, and doing the stuff that we do at otgbasketball.com. But it's just really exciting. Like you said, it's a wide open league, and we mm-hmm. really do not know who's going to come out this year on top. So Jay, where can the people find you?
I am on Twitter at jaychris, jaychris 206. Shout out to the Emerald City, Seattle, at jaychris 206.
You follow me on Twitter and Instagram at kwalhoops, KWAL hoops. Be sure to follow the brand on Twitter at OTG Basketball. You can also follow this podcast on Twitter at Full Access Hoops. And also be sure to go to dsgntree.com/off-the-glass. For merchandise, we have Fear the Beard and Brody T-shirt, a James Harden Westbrook shirt. We have Antetokounmpo, Brooklyn Buzz, a bunch of shirts available. If you use the code OTG5, you can get $5 off your purchase. Until next time, peace out, knuckleheads.